listening to Turnout, opening up the dance scene in Toronto, London, and New York on CIUT 89.5 FM. This podcast was originally broadcast on March 16th, 2016.
Good morning. You're listening to Turnout, opening up the dance scene here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Nicole Hamilton, and joining me are...
I'm Małgorzata Nowacka.
I'm Samara Thompson.
And we are the hosts and producers of Turnout. We have a great show for you today, and we're really excited about today's lineup on the show. And later today, we will have Corey Sakaluk, and Akram Khan will talk about his upcoming show, Toro. And we're going to be introducing the gadget of the week. We'll be reviewing and discussing Attendance 2.
Dance artists use a huge array of interesting, useful, and sometimes bizarre gadgets to get their job done. Each week, we're going to highlight a new tool, some kind of gizmo that attracts our curiosity. So today, we're going to start with a gizmo that attracts my curiosity, something that I use almost every day. It's an app, because everybody loves a good app. So the app of my choice that I use all the time is called Attendance 2. It might sound kind of dull and a kind of something that's not so useful, but it is. It's something that I use for all my dance classes. I teach at a university and in school settings and also privately, and it's amazingly handy. And it's also handy for dance classes, sports teams, races, like if you're going to go do run a marathon, keep track of people. There's tons of different uses for it. So to talk with me about it is Małgorzata Nowacka.
So what does it do other than, you know, like what's the difference between that and using a notepad?
Speed. And I guess the digitization of it. It's really great because, first of all, you can put all your students in it. So if you're someone like me that deals with a lot of people and you're not great at remembering names, which I'm afraid I'm not, it's really handy. So in a given 4 months, I may have 150 new students and I'm supposed to remember all their names. I'm not that good at that.
And that's a key, can you photograph them and put their photo next
Absolutely.
To it?
So you can take their picture from the app itself. So you're not running back and forth between different applications. You take their picture next to their name, which you can import from Dropbox, or you can import from your contacts, or you can import those names from a Excel sheet as well. So it's super easy. So you import them, they come to your class, you take their picture, then you get their lovely faces next to their names. So when you're trying to remember who's who and, you know, which David is which David and trying to remember which is which or people with multiple names, it's really easy.
And what else does it do? Because you know how we have delinquents, and as a teacher, there's always someone you're thinking, have they even been here this month? And you can't remember. So you were talking about how it deals with that.
So it'll give you, it'll highlight a student that's been there after a certain number of absences. So in some settings, it's 2 or 3. You just set whatever it is you want. You can set the dates you want to take attendance for. And so say if you want to mark late, you know, for me, that matters. In dance, you show up on time and you're... Showing up on time actually means early, but you're there right at the beginning. So you can mark anybody who's late, anybody who's away, anybody who has a reason for being away. You can mark it all up. You can choose whatever it is you're marking. You can also make notes for the day. So this is the day that you gave an exam, or this is the day that you taught a new combination. So you could even write down the notes of it. This is the day that, you know, it's Hockey Mom 1's day to bring the brownies, or whatever it is that you need to make a note of, it's right in there. And then from there, after you've made all those notes, you can also export them, which is really easy, into a spreadsheet. So it's super, super easy. And for those of you that are even more technically inclined, you can produce your own QR codes. So if you want to keep things anonymous, but you want to be able to print stuff out, you can do your own QR codes. You can also print things out with just an ID number. You can email everybody. You can email one student. You can email all of them. So again, it's a lifesaver. And it has, as I said, multiple uses outside
of
dance.
So how much time do you think it saved you?
Hours and hours and hours. I mean, for me, I use it all the time and I have a lot of students, so it's great. But even if I were just teaching a few students that stayed the same for a year, it's really handy. You can also import students in and out of different classes. So say if you're teaching hockey and you have – or coaching hockey, I guess, is maybe the right term for that one. And you have a student who has an injury and you need to remember that, you can make a note. That note will follow them from attendance to attendance, from whatever league they're in, from one thing to another.
Right. And downloading it is pretty easy. If you just go into your apps and you need to type in attendance two, if you attach the two into attendance, it will come up at the top. Because there are lots of different attendance tools. This is the one we're talking about.
Yeah, you want to do attendance two. We'll put a link on Facebook.
And also on our website, which will be there tomorrow, just so you know. And David Reed Software is the publisher for this.
Yeah, he works as a university professor or a college professor. And so he really wanted to have something that worked for him. And he teaches computer science, so it makes sense that he would develop something like this. And he's made it pretty affordable. It's $6.99. Which, you know, not as cheap as, say, Angry Birds, but it's still very, very useful. Like I said, I use it all the time. It's been a lifesaver. And I did a lot of research on different apps that I used. So this is the one.
Okay, so let's just talk about that. Did you look at every single app out there before you purchased this one?
No. No, I don't have that much time.
Because some people do that. They will look at every single thing. But the point is that this is an informed decision. That's
yeah,
why
no, I looked at
app.
A lot of them. I mean, since I bought this app, which was many years ago now, there's been more on the market. But I check back periodically to see if I think any of them have features that are better or an interface that's a little easier. But really, this one is so simple. It's so easy. He also has videos up, so it'll just walk you through how to do everything.
Oh, yeah. And is it hard? Because sometimes things seem simple and you go to the setup and it feels like you're looking at, I don't know, some puzzle piece that you can't possibly solve.
I think for about the first minute. The first minute, I was like, I don't get this. And then I just, you know, you dive in and then it was easy. And for those that find it maybe a little more challenging, as I said, he has videos on his website for support that walks you through every aspect that you could need. So, I mean, I can't sing its praises enough. And I love the fact that there's so many different uses for it, whether, like I said, teaching or sports or keeping track of, you know, attendance for your cooking class or your whatever else you need to keep track of who's shown up for a party, even, you know, who's come, who's shown up, who brought the potato salad, whatever it is you need to do.
Well, it sounds amazing. I'm buying it right now.
Yeah, it's awesome. So that's our gadget of the week. Each week we're going to bring you a new gadget. Stay tuned for next week's show when we'll bring you something else as intriguing or interesting or just
useful.
Useful.
Yeah.
So now we're going to take a quick music break. We're going to bring you Toronto's own Hoggy Fogtown Boys with their great piece, Suffering Succotash.
welcome back to Turnout. My name is Nicole Hamilton, one of your hosts and producers here on CIUT 89.5 FM. And if you're just tuning in, this is the debut of Turnout. This is where we open up the dance scene here on CIUT, and we're pleased to bring you each week a new guest, a new gadget, and hopefully information that you can use with regards to the dance scene and the dance industry. And joining me live in studio right now is Corey Sakaluk from Dance Collection Dance. We're so pleased to have you. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So can you start off by telling our listening audience, Corey, what is Dance Collection Dance?
We are a national archive for theatrical dance in Canada. So we hold collections from as far back as the 1890s. And we teach artists how to preserve their collections with proper archival standards so that we can continue to teach the Canadian public and the international Canadian studies community about Canadian dance and how that links in with other moments in history.
Okay. And I'm going to ask you the obvious. Why archive? Why would an artist decide to archive? What is the benefit in that?
Well, for example, when I first started at Dance Collection Dance, we acquired the Dance Makers Archives, and we were able to create a beautiful exhibit on the occasion of their 40th anniversary, which had kind of a soft launch at their space and then was in our space for about 6 months. We have a gallery now at our current location. I know people who came through the exhibit who were taught by many of the dancers featured in the exhibit, and one of my friends was actually moved to tears just coming to that exhibit and seeing, you know, this prolific company represented and getting to see in front of her eyes how it had grown over all those years. So you never know as an artist what's going to become of your work and who might be interested in it later on, whether it's for remounting or if it plugs into, you know, socio-political issues of the time that you were creating it. So it makes sense to just save it properly as you're going along, because if you want to use it at a later time, then it will be in a good condition. And sometimes it could be a collaborative kind of presentation later on. Like we're currently waiting to be able to have the capacity to take in a lot of collections from the 1970s. And we want to make sure that we represent all the diversity of dance forms and dancers and choreographers from that period. So the more people saving stuff, the better able we'll be able to really do it justice.
Right. And how long would an artist, an organization typically archive material?
I think it would really vary depending on the length of that person or that company's existence or sort of key creative production periods. So things like we would recommend saving would be like process journals, casting lists, paperwork, like administrative paperwork, as well as 3D kind of artifacts like costumes or shoes, like we have in our collection from some 1950s ballerinas, like their full makeup kits, masks. So yeah, I guess it just depends on how long you're creating for.
Is there a limit of time, Corey, that you would give an organization to archive? So, you know, for example, if they come in, they say, we need to hold this here for 20 years or 15 years. Do you provide a limit?
If we take in a collection, then our plan is to keep it and preserve it forever. So we have some on-site storage. The space that we were operating out of our co-founder and director Miriam Adams' home for about 27 years. And so when we moved out a couple of years back, we actually were fortunate to move into a former jewelry space. So they have all these little drawers for jewelry that we now can keep our archives in, like artifacts and things, more of them on site. And then we store the rest of the collection off site in an off-site storage locker, and then we can retrieve it for researchers or retrieve it for exhibits or retrieve it to, you know, recatalog it or rehouse it if that's needed.
So when we take collections in, we plan to keep them forever.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, one of the things I'm wondering, and I'm sure our listening audience is curious about as well, is how do you store things differently? Because I would imagine costuming needs to be stored differently than paper materials. Are there cold storage that's necessary to store different items? So how are things stored differently?
Well, the Canadian Conservation Institute kind of sets out the peak kind of ideal archival standards. And we do our best to come close to those. So, for example, like if you're keeping your collection in file folders and file boxes in terms of the paperwork and things like that, you want to make sure the files and the boxes are acid-free. You want to make sure that you remove staples and paper clips from the paper. Conditions to be sensitive to would be the amount of light things are exposed to, the amount of humidity things are exposed to. Basements and attics are like the worst places to keep your stuff, which is where most of us shove our stuff.
Right.
So if you're going to store it somewhere, it's best to store it not against an outside wall, for example. With costumes, hanging them on cushioned acid-free hangers, I'm not entirely sure. Our director of collections and research, Amy Boring, is really the expert on this. I'm not entirely sure what the covering would be for the costumes, but I could find out for you.
Okay, great. Well, you know, the other thing that I'm very curious to know is, are there any exciting pieces, or what is the coolest piece that you have that's currently stored with you, a unique piece that has been with you for a while that the archival, those that are archiving are just really excited about in the company? Is there anything that stands out?
Yes. So we have what actually might be the oldest surviving theatrical costume in Canada in our collection, and it was restored over a period of 2 years at the Canadian Conservation Institute. It dates from 1906, and that is the costume of Maud Allan from her Salome piece, which was actually originally performed in homes here in Toronto, like in rich people's homes, in the kind of salons, you know, in their living room area. So, we held an event with that costume, and it was incredibly popular. It's just a beautiful piece. It's covered in jewels, and Amy Boring is very knowledgeable in talking about the support structures that have been sewn into the costume and things like that, both for the dancing that it was used for, as well as the conservation now.
Okay. All right. And if you are just tuning in, you're listening to Turnout here on CIUT 89.5 FM. Turnout is debuting today, and we're so excited about the program and hope that you are too. Today we have with us in studio, we're pleased to have with us in studio, Corey Sakaluk, who's here from Dance Collection Dance. And one of the questions that that I also wanted to bring to you is, what about showings? Do you have, or do you allow the public to be able to come in and view some of these amazing things that you currently have archived?
Yes, like actually a huge part of our mandate and our hope is that we'll be providing more and more public access to our animated collection. So we do now rotating exhibits that stay in our gallery for 6 months. So coming up, opening in early April, we're actually going to be doing one on the Tumines, Nesta Tumine in the Ottawa Ballet. We have the huge backdrops that were hand-painted and used in those shows. And we did a collaboration with the Ryerson Theatre Department to make sure they're properly stored and their students got a chance to light them and things like that. And so we're going to be doing, after 3 years of photographing them and whatnot, we're going to be doing an exhibit on that starting in April for 6 months. And we just wrote all our multi-year grants, so we have all of these exhibits kind of planned out. We're waiting to hear about the funding and everything. There's something else I wanted to say.
Any current galleries, other current galleries that are happening?
We do have a show in our gallery right now that's going on until March 24th, so it's the last chance to see it, and that was called Drawn to Dance, and it focuses on the work of three painters who took dancers, particularly some from the Ballet Russe, And that was a lot of the focus of their work. So we were lucky to acquire some of the paintings and things like that. And we focused this exhibit that's finishing March 24th on that.
Okay. And those selected works are by York Wilson.
Yeah.
I believe also Grant McDonald and John Martin Alfson, correct?
Yes, yes.
Okay. All right. And we are just out of time.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you. Can you share with us, where would an individual go online, social media, if they'd like to learn more about your company and what you do?
So our website is dcd.ca. We do also have a Facebook page. It's just called Dance Collection Dance. You can follow us on Twitter as well at the same. And for anyone interested in learning how to properly archive your collections, we have an event coming up next week on Wednesday the 16th, and that's a grassroots archiving workshop. You can participate from anywhere across Canada by live stream or in person in Toronto, and the price of it is $25 or $20 if you're a CATA, ACTRA, or Equity member.
Right.
And it really is applicable for people in any kind of grassroots organization as well, and of course all artists working in all disciplines.
Okay, and that event is from 1 to 3 p.m., and it's also going to be broadcasted as a private webinar as well.
Yes.
All right, mm-hmm. Wonderful. Okay, well, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us here on Turnout.
My pleasure. Thank you.
It's a pleasure, and we're going to go to a short break, and we'll be right back after these messages.
CIUT presents An Afternoon with David Barzomian, Monday, March 21st, beginning at 12 noon, in the Debates Room, Hart House, 7 Hart House Circle, U of T. David Barzomian is the founder and director of the long-running radio program Alternative Radio, heard every Thursday at 11 a.m. on CIUT. David will be discussing current affairs, followed by a Q&A with the audience. Tickets are $30 each and can be purchased in advance at CIUT.fm. All proceeds benefit CIUT 89.5, and tax receipts will be sent for tickets purchased in advance. CIUT 89.5, the sound of your city.
Right here, right now. Every day, CIUT 89.5, the sound of your city. Woo! Toronto.
You're listening to Turnout, opening up the dance scene on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Samara Thompson. And you were just listening to Gajalila Tala by Toronto's own Trishi Sankaran. Akram Kam Company is an internationally celebrated dance company founded by choreographer and dancer Akram Khan and producer Farooq Chaudhry in 2000. Acclaimed for its risk-taking approach and the intermingling of contemporary and classical Indian dance, it's in Toronto this week to perform Toro, a new adaptation of Toro Baka, at the Canadian Stage's Bluma Appel Theatre. Akram Khan, part of a Bangladeshi family in London, England, got his start in dance in Kathak, a South Asian classical dance form, at the age of 7, at the insistence of his mother. Reluctant at first, he soon found great enthusiasm for dance, practicing long hours in the family's garage, striving to perfect his skills. In his early 20s, he discovered contemporary dance and began to study the techniques of modern dance founders Martha Graham and Merce Cunningham and the works of Pina Bausch. What emerged from his body was a distinctive and compelling physical language, as was the choreography he started to make. That led to forming his dance company, and he's gone on to be considered one of the UK's leading choreographers, touring the world with his dance productions. He's collaborated with the National Ballet of China, actress Julie Binoche, ballerina Sylvie Guillaume, singer Kylie Minogue, visual artist Anish Kapoor, and composer Steve Reich. He's received numerous awards, including the Laurence Olivier Award and the Bessie Award, to name a very, very few. Akram Khan, with his unique fusion of style, was described by the Financial Times as an artist, quote, who speaks tremendously of tremendous things. To talk about those tremendous things, I spoke earlier this week with Akram Khan at the Bluma Appel Theatre.
Hello.
Hi.
So, what led you from a really strong background in Kathak, which you were really enamored with at that time, to find modern dance, and to go not only to find modern dance, but to lean towards some of its founding members and their training methods?
I can't take credit for it. It's as simple as that. It was because I give credit to the people who were pushing me away from dance. So that was my community. They weren't pushing me away, but they were not taking it seriously. They were not taking me seriously. And they put a lot of pressure on my parents to send me to university to do something which is to do with being a doctor. Or actually, their ideal situation would be if I became a mathematician.
Like your grandfather?
Yeah. My grandfather was a bit of a genius. And so I didn't want to do any of the subjects that they wanted me to do. I couldn't imagine it doing it. And so there was a course called Contemporary Dance, Performing Arts, in Leicester, De Montfort University, and I thought, well, I'm going to apply and see if I get... So I went for the audition, and in the audition, I'd never seen contemporary dance up to that point, and I went to university late anyway. I think I went at 21 or 22. Usually you go at 18. So I was lost for a while, and so anyway, I didn't get into the university. I was invited to audition, and in the lunch break I went downstairs to the library because they said that they informed us that they were going to ask questions about our opinion about contemporary dance, the students. Of course, I had no bloody clue what contemporary dance meant, so I went downstairs to the library, and I think it was downstairs in the library, I think it was downstairs, I can't remember now, but I remember going to one section where it said contemporary dance, and there was a whole bunch of video cassettes, and I pulled out two. One was Pina Bausch, Bride of Spring, and Cafe Mula on that cassette. The other one was DV8. I think it was Dead Dreams and Monochrome Men. I think that changed my life.
Yeah.
The direction.
Just pulling out those videos.
Yeah, and watching them, because it horrified me. It traumatized me. And it fascinated me. It ruptured something in my thinking. Look, I was trained in classical Indian dance. If you know nothing else but classical Indian dance, and you see someone naked on stage, for example,
mm-hmm.
or two men touching each other, or hugging each other in an intimate way in Dead Dreams and Monochrome Men, you know, I freaked out because I was so bloody sheltered in this Indian Bangladeshi community. You know, growing up as a Muslim boy, it was tough for me at that period to watch that film, but it also fascinated me. And I think I bless those artists for making work like that, that really watching DV8 and Pina Bausch, but watching DV8, funnily enough, it deviated me into a new area of making work, and that's when I started to ask questions rather than accept answers.
So where did you start to train, and what did you start to train in?
I trained in many things. I mean, at that time it was release, but it was also Alexander Technique. We were studying Alexander Technique, and then I went to Northern School of Contemporary Dance from De Montfort, and that's when we got into my favorite, the woman who I call the bitch from hell, if I can say. Mm-hmm. And I love her because my body was definitely not meant for it. Graham Technique. My goodness, I think I swore at her every morning when I was doing that bloody contraction. I just couldn't do it. But it was the most phenomenal experience I've ever had studying that form. And I, you know, when I can't do something, I become obsessed with it. And I was very good at not being very good at stuff. So I became obsessed with those things. One of them was Kathak, mm-hmm. because my sister was far better than I was. She was 4 years younger, but she was 2 years ahead of me in the Kathak. She was just a natural. But that's the problem with talent. Sometimes people just don't take it seriously. But I wasn't very talented, but I was very hardworking. I was talented at being focused. More importantly, I was very talented at finding a plan to get better. So I created my own system. So I studied Graham, I studied Cunningham, I studied ballet. More importantly, I trained on my own. I mean, it was in the evenings or very early in the mornings that I would go into the studio, and I would try to understand and listen to the body and just keep training.
So when you finished school, yeah. you worked professionally for a while. And at some point, you met Farooq Chaudhry.
Yeah, he was my producer. He came and saw me perform. He was kind of lost, looking for some artist he wanted to support. And I was kind of lost because I needed a producer, someone to create an infrastructure around me. I mean, one has to be clear that, a lot of the preparation had been done before that. My body was, I had already met Jonathan Burrows, mm-hmm. so he was a huge influence on my work. I'd seen Anne Teresa de Kiersmacher, but Farooq was really very important for me because, and I think I was very important for him, because, you know, nobody would take him seriously because he was just starting. You know, who is he going to manage? But he had this force that he could use and say, well, this is what I'm supporting. And I needed that support from him because he then had a vision. He's a very gifted guy, and he had this vision of being able to create a structure around me. And we were really like it was a relationship. We developed a vision together, and we moved forward. And he was instrumental to my career. So yeah.
And 16 years later, from the formation of the company, 16 years, yeah. you're now considered one of the most important choreographers in the world. Which, I mean, you both have obviously worked really well together. You two tour the world. Right now, two shows simultaneously.
Yeah.
Which is quite phenomenal.
Yeah, we're lucky. We're very lucky. I mean, there's a lot of luck as well. Hard work, but a lot of people do hard work. And there are a lot of talented people. We were lucky because we came in at a time where the financial crisis hadn't hit. So there were opportunities. And there was something missing in the South Asian contemporary dance world, whatever that is, you know? And I was doing it at that time. And I was curious about my background and about identity. And I was reacting to things that were just a little bit clinical also. Look at Bharatanatyam or Kathak movement done with contemporary music or with Bach, and that makes it contemporary. No, it doesn't. And I was more interested about human narrative. I'm interested about human beings and their stories, and Kathak is all about story. Actually,
that's
Indian classical dance is all about story. Yeah, Kathak particularly. Katha means to tell a story.
Right.
To talk, to, you know, to communicate. And for me, it was all about, yeah, responding to the situation. But in the beginning, I knew that I had to create a movement language before I could communicate something. I needed to have the tools to communicate.
Do you have your own vocabulary now? Mm. Or is it constantly in flux with whatever piece you're doing?
I think it's in flux. I mean, there is a stylistic identity, but I've got a huge identity crisis now. But yeah, because you know, I'm a bit like I like to think like the there was this monk in India, and a journalist asked him, your name? You had a name before, right? And why do you not go by your name anymore?" And she says, "Because I've changed from that name the next day." So my identity is constant. We are all constantly evolving. We forget that. And so the stylistic thing that people refer to me as, I'm terrified of it. Do I have a language? No, because then suddenly, you know, that's what defines me, and that makes me claustrophobic. So we're constantly changing. In life and death, we're constantly moving, because in life, our body continues to breathe, and in death, our body continues to decompose. So we're constantly in motion, and we forget that sometimes. So I don't like boxes. And I think that's something both Farouk and I fought against a lot, because we were put a lot in the South Asian box in Contemporary Festival. And I said, why the hell do I want to be in a... I fought a lot. Why are you putting me in a South Asian department in the Contemporary Festival? Why am I separated from the main Contemporary Dance Festival just because of my color and because of the language? My language, not my language, the language that I'm exploring. Then I fought really hard because I wanted to become universal. I wanted a taxi driver from Toronto to be able to get something from the work that I do. And of course, what's happened is all the elite, let's say, contemporary artists feel like we're not artists anymore when it becomes when it becomes accessible. But for me, there's only good art and bad art. Whether it's musical, classical, contemporary, I don't put boxes in things. I'm interested. There's only good art and bad art for me.
There's a lot of art and craft.
Yeah.
You know, what's definitely.
Sorry, I talk too much.
No, go on, good. You speak. It's an interview. That's what we're here for. How much does the audience influence your choreographic choices? Because I mean, you've been quoted as saying in The Guardian that audiences have changed and they're greedy, demanding more and more and quicker. That expectation is going to cripple artists. It's like creating work in a food processor.
Yeah, I think I'm one of those audience, by the way. I include myself in that audience.
Yeah.
Because information, we have less patience.
Absolutely.
And the internet has made that.
Mm-hmm.
And life around us has made that. And it's frightening because we can't accept stillness. We can't accept silence. And we can't accept... I think because we're terrified that we may have to confront ourselves in that moment of stillness and silence. And that's, as an audience, we're terrified of that. And so, as a choreographer, you're far more in demand to be to be exposing them, throwing them with ideas, just in case they get bored.
Mm-hmm.
If it's 10 seconds too long, they'll get bored. I don't know. I think, yeah, we are, you know, our craft, this generation's craft, isn't better than the generation before. No way, because we're inspired by the generation before, but we're having to find far more ideas than before, because it's just the way we digest things as an audience. My daughter is 3 almost, and you know, she's the generation of the iPad, and information is at her fingertips, and so I can see she has less patience than what we must have had as children.
Everything quick, now and fast. Give me more.
Yeah.
Now we should talk about why you're in Toronto, which is, I guess, really the world premiere of Toro, which was originally going to be Toro Baca.
Yeah.
Now your partner, Israel Galvan, injured himself.
Yeah.
And originally it was going to be a wonderful duet, juxtaposing and combining and intertwining Katak dance with flamenco and giving it its own flavor.
Yeah.
I'm wondering how the two of you decided to collaborate, because at first you weren't so keen on it.
No, I'm still not keen on the bloody flamenco. No, I'm joking. No, I was not so keen on flamenco because the collaboration of Katak and flamenco, because I'd seen so many before.
They have the same cultural roots.
Yeah.
So they originally from
from India, then some people migrated to Spain,
exactly.
And that was the original foundation of Kathak.
Yeah.
Or pardon me, of flamenco.
Flamenco, yeah. And I think it was difficult for me because I'd seen very sweet versions in the past. My Guruji did a wonderful version, but it was very pretty. Look how we dance in rhythm, and look at the connections. And I just I wanted to stab something and see and see what's inside.
Yeah.
Again, it's for me the human struggle. It can't just be look at the lines. We dance similar. We have similar language. And then I went and saw Israel because this wonderful producer, presenter, who runs Mercat de las Flores in Barcelona, knows both of us. And so he said, why don't you go and see Israel? Just go and see him. And I went to see him. And then somebody whispered to him, why didn't you go and see Akram? But when I saw him, I was literally... It was another rupture. And it's nice when those ruptures happen because they're very rare. And suddenly I was watching an artist who was doing flamenco but wasn't. I didn't know how to define it. And when you can't define something, that's when you know somebody's making something unique. That's when you know this artist is going somewhere. Because it wasn't flamenco, but it was. You cannot, no flamenco dancer can say that's not flamenco. It's in his blood. Just because he changes the movement or position doesn't mean it's not flamenco. It's in his blood. And I think I related to him because it was a similar thing that I got, experience that I had, where Kathak specialists or classical specialists would kind of criticize me and say, well, he doesn't do Kathak anymore, he does contemporary. And then what was beautiful is the two great masters of India, one of them being Pandit Bishu Maharaj and the other one being Kumudini Lakhia, said, no, even when he's doing contemporary, there's Kathak in there. You can't take Kathak out of him. He's been doing that all his life. And I thought, well, I'm going to listen to what they say. Because you can't. You can't take your parents out of the way you think right now. Because your parents and your background as a child had a huge influence of the way you become today. And so the same thing applies from the dance style that you've been studying all your life as a child. So when I saw him perform, I said, okay, I really want to spend time with him in the studio.
Which is a little challenging considering you don't have a common language other than dance, but like different vocabularies.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a rehearsal director called Jose, who's my rehearsal director, who is Spanish, and he had studied flamenco a long time ago, and he studies Kathak with me. So
that's handy.
It was great because there was points where Israel Galvan was describing a very conceptual thing about blue, the color blue, and so I said, okay, let's go and do this red thing, and all I was doing was red, and he said something's lost in translation so we had to have a translator.
Now unfortunately he injured his knee
and
while you were on tour and are about to perform, and so you've reworked the show
in
how long did you have
Well, we tested it out in Richmond, Virginia. So that was our first test, and it was really wonderful. I really enjoyed there, and we had about 4 days.
Oh wow.
But you have to bear in mind, this show has been done close to 100 shows.
That's quite the run.
So we know.
Yeah.
It's in our blood. The show is in our blood. So we can transform it. But I just didn't have the guts to say, okay, this is going to be a solo until we tested it. And lovely people in Richmond who invited us, the university, just allowed us to test it out there and took the risk of doing it there. I was really disappointed it didn't go to New York, to the BAM. I was deeply disappointed. I was deeply disappointed it's not going to UCLA.
Oh, it's not?
I also have a newfound respect for the people who are accepting it and taking it and taking a risk. That's what it's about, isn't it? And Toronto, Matthew decided to take a risk, and I'm immensely grateful for that because I loved my experience here last time when I came to do Dish, which was about 2 years ago, my solo piece, and so it's just wonderful. And I'm going to Irvine in Orange County, am I correct? Orange County? It's in
California.
California.
Somewhere in
West Coast?
Yeah.
Yeah. I should have listened to my geography teacher when I was younger, but anyway.
Me too.
Yeah. I thought Toronto was west, but it's not. I just discovered that it's central.
We're considered relatively central, yeah.
So you see, you're learning something new every time.
So you're performing on stage March 9th to 12th, which is going to be really exciting to bring this to our audiences here. And it's a Canadian stage presentation. And again, it used to be Toro Baca, and now it's Toro. And you're also, well, you're not doing it, but there's going to be a pre-show chat about the work on Friday, March 11th at 6:15 to 6:45. And for tickets, people can call 416-368-3110 or come in person to the Berkeley Street box office or go online to canadianstage.com. I'm so sorry we're out of time, but it has been such a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I look forward to seeing your show.
I'm Samara Thompson. We were just listening to my interview with Akram Khan here with his company this week and presenting his show March 9th to 12th. Joining me in the studio now is our other host and producer, Malgorzata Novatska, who is with me for the interview.
Yes, and it was quite remarkable. I mean, it's always a great opportunity to be able to ask all these questions and see what happens. And it's very organic and completely different than reading about it, obviously.
And he's very open. He's very open to talk about what he feels and what he sees and what's going on with him in his dance world.
And I think that, we actually were asking, we did ask you, our listeners, to post questions for us to ask. And I guess because this is our launch, we didn't get as many, and we did get one, but not in time. So in the future, we do hope to let you know exactly which guests we're doing, especially if it's an international star like Akram Khan, so that you can send us questions. And there are different ways you can do that. So you can post a question for us on Facebook, where we'll be announcing a guest. You can send us an email at turnoutradio@ciut.fm. Sorry, that's not true. turnout@ciut.fm. Yes, thank you, Samara. but anyway, I think it's really exciting because this way we'll get to discover what it is that you want to discover.
Now, when we were talking with Akram Khan, as I mentioned in the interview, we ran out of time. But our listeners may have been familiar with him. He's been in the news a lot. He's had tons of headlines. The first being that, as I mentioned in the interview, that he had to completely change his show in a very short amount of time because he was supposed to be performing with Israel Gavan, who's an internationally known flamenco dancer, but he hurt his knee. So now it's been reworked. It's still the intermingling and combining of Katak and flamenco, but it's going to take on a new feel. Though I hear, according to Akram, when we talked afterwards, it's going to be really fun. It's playful and interesting and
quirky.
Quirky. Yeah, that's a great word for it. Quirky.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that. He was also in the news recently talking about technique and how he feels the UK isn't necessarily producing dancers of the quality and caliber that he thinks is appropriate. So there's a lot of interesting news on that as well. We'll be posting links on some of that information.
Yeah, and I mean, this is obviously it's a very volatile topic, and there has been a lot of backlash in response to some of the things he said. And what is interesting is that some of the things that he has said then were isolated completely out of their contextual nest, and then further responded to, and then that created more responses. And
that seems to happen a lot with him at the moment. There's, like I said, he's been in the news a lot for different comments and things. We'll post links. He's responded to some of those. One of the things he asked us, we were supposed to cover, but we ran out of time, is one of the places he was misquoted, is his next collaboration is going to be with the English National Ballet, and he's going to be working on a new, fresh version of Giselle with sets by Academy Award-winning designer Tim Yip, who's done Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and it with an adaptation of Adolph Adams' original 1841 score by composer Ben Frost. And one of the articles talked about how Giselle is now a cow. in this version, but that's not true.
Yeah, is Giselle going to be a cow? I heard that.
No. they were talking about Toro Baca, and Toro means cow or bull, and there was some confusion, and somehow the word is out now that Giselle is a cow. So that isn't true. So it is interesting to sort of see that there are some misinterpretations out there.
You know what? That it would be kind of interesting if she was a cow.
It would be interesting. So, from sylph-like ballerina to cow. I don't know.
I think it can work.
So, again, the show is happening as part of Canadian Stage. It's Toro, performed and created by Akram Khan, and originally by Israel Galvan. And it's happening at the Bluma Appel Theatre, March 9th to 12th.
And one thing to note also is that the previous dance show at Canadian Stage did sell out. So if you're planning to attend, it's a great idea to get tickets in advance, because the caliber and the experience of the shows that are curated by Canadian Stage has been really remarkable. And it's exciting. So I would recommend just getting your tickets immediately if you don't have them already.
And on Friday's show, there'll be a pre-show chat at 6:15 to 6:45. I'm sure that's going to be really interesting as well.
Great.
So now joining us in the studio is Nicole Hamilton.
Hello, co-producers.
Hello.
I loved hearing about that interview. It was just wonderful.
It was a blast. It was really fun.
Yes.
So this is our inaugural show.
It is. It is. And there's so much for our listening audience to expect. I'm excited because I feel like this is just such a wonderful platform for artists to come and talk about what they're doing. But there's so many unique things that we're going to be adding as well, right? Our gadgets, like you both spoke about today.
Mm-hmm. Well, so yeah, we have our gadget of the week. And sometimes there'll be things that are very useful, such as the app we talked about today, Attendance 2. And sometimes they're just going to be the quirky and bizarre, like, what do you do with that? Right. Kind of thing.
And they're also fashion trends, because sometimes you go to a studio and everybody has the same bag. And you kind of wonder, what is that bag? And why is it there?
Or why do dancers dress the way they do? I mean, people see dancers, and I think ever since, you know, well, for a long time, but, you know, the iconic image of the flash dance dancer with the shoulder bare. Why? Why is that? So things we see, trends we see, quirky, yeah. Interesting.
Or hair braiding. There was a time where all ballerinas would wear, in certain places, I have to say, Ballet Yoga in Canada especially, because that's what I see, there would be these crazy braids. And it seems like every single person had crazy braids in their hair. And it was so beautiful. And I just wondered, how do you make that happen?
Right.
So things like that, obviously very useful, important.
I will be continuing to bring you international guests such as Akram Khan and local artists as well. We're going to give you a breadth and different aspects of dance, not just the performing aspects, but lots of different things about us. And we'd love your feedback, as Mel was mentioning earlier.
So we do have a website. You can go to turnoutradio.com. And if you are interested in finding out more about the app, there's going to be a link there so you can easily find it. There is a mention about Akram Khan, so if you'd like to explore more, you will know how to spell it if you've never heard the name before. So you can visit us there.
We'll also have a link on a YouTube channel shortly. We also videotaped that interview, and we'll have our podcast up and going in a day or so as well.
How exciting. We've had individuals who've called in and asked or messaged us on Facebook as well, and asked about the little things, like, you know, can you talk about what to put in a dance bag? You know, what do I put in my dance bag other than my Band-Aids and my bobby pins and the things that I use to, you know, put my hair up in that great bun? What else? So all these things we're going to be covering in the weeks to come. So we hope that everybody will tune in and share their thoughts and their questions with us as well.
Great.
And we're just about out of time. And this has been a full hour and a fast hour. You've been listening to the debut of Turnout, opening up here on the dance scene on CIUT 89.5 FM. We're the producers and hosts for the show. I'm Nicole Hamilton.
I'm Małgorzata Nowacka.
I'm Samara Thompson.
And we'd like to thank our master tech, Ken Stauer, for taking such good care of us today. And we would love your feedback. As we mentioned, this is the debut, and we can definitely be reached by email at turnout@ciut.fm. and connect with us on a few different platforms, either Facebook, Turnout 89.5 FM. You can also tweet us at Turnout Radio. That's our Twitter handle. Our website, which is live, is also turnoutradio.com. And we leave you now with music by Roger Skinner. Thank you. Thank you, Samara. So great having more than one producer, because they keep you on track. He's going to be singing Mysterio. And thank you for listening to our listening audience. We hope your week finds you turning out in dance.
Thank you for listening to Turnout, opening up the dance scene in Toronto, London, and New York on CIUT 89.5 FM. This podcast was originally broadcast on March 9th, 2016.